to answer your question, just as far as, you know, managing a team and everything, I mean, this is a big transition from having been a individual contributor in the past, and I don't pretend to know all the answers or say I'm doing it right at all times, but it is an opportunity to kind of take that differentiated mindset and say, again, what is our market need? What do our individual customers need? How do they resonate with our product? And try to speak to those audiences in a way that resonates with them. So we're very intentional with how we build out our team and who we bring on and what kind of role they fulfill. And we push everybody to kind of go outside the boundaries of the typical version of that job, where it's like, okay, so we could do the checklist of deliverables and tactics, but what else could we do? And
hello, hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm your host, Sid Caton, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by Mike McGee, Director of Product Marketing at Vanica. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sid. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we got a lot of fun chatter before we even started recording, so I feel like nice and amped up, ready to go. But yeah, if you can just start by telling us a little bit more about yourself, and what do you like to do for fun?
Good question. So my name is Mike McGee, like you said, Director of Product Marketing at Vanica. I live and work just north of Boston with my wife, my son, and our dog. We're in a sleepy little horse town with painfully large property taxes called Hamilton, Massachusetts. For fun, I'm, you know, kind of in the throes of dad life, right? So like a lot of my time outside of work is focused on keeping him happy and excited and learning. Other than that, you know, when I have whatever vanishingly small free time is left, it's, you know, a lot of reading, as you can probably gather from my background here. You know, I'm what I might call a fractional runner at this point, you know, kind of doing it on the side where I can. Just trying to, you know, keep fit and healthy. But yeah, I mean, as far as keeping up to date on latest music and, you know, whatever good shows are on Apple TV is kind of where I'm spending a lot of my free time right now.
Ooh, latest music. Okay, now I'm curious. Where do you have any genres you tune into usually?
So this is always a thorny question, but yeah, I do get into a lot of heavier metal type music. And that's, I think a lot of the times it elicits some reactions, not unlike yours, where it's, you know, to me, I've resonated with it for a while, and I think it's more the technicality behind it. A lot of the people that I find that really enjoy it are also, you know, either amateur or recovering musicians, and to some degree. I played a lot of guitar growing up, and I haven't, you know, had a chance to dust it off in a little bit, but I think that's where I get a lot of my appreciation for some of the nuanced details behind it. So
very interesting. Yeah. I had a heavy metal phase, and I definitely feel you. Very amateur. I would say like on the lighter side of amateur musician, and also have a guitar that has collected a lot of dust. So,
well, I have to ask now, in a phase, who comes to the top of your mind there with,
oh man, I mean, this is horrible, but I'm just going to say it, 'cause I was playing a song yesterday. My wife and I were just getting back, and like we're about to park after going to the park with our dog, and somehow a Rise Against song just came on, and then like all of a sudden all this like teenage angst just came out. So it's the first name that came to mind, and I just started singing, and she's like, I didn't know you had this phase. And I'm like, yeah, I did.
Yeah, everyone's got their skeletons in their closet, right?
Exactly. Oh, I love it. Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of started answering this one, but like, what is a non-marketing skill or habit that has made you better at your job as a PMM?
Non-marketing, I'd argue, I mean, it's almost arguably a marketing related skill that's sort of in disguise to some degree. But one thing that I think always comes back into the top of my mind when I'm thinking through marketing strategy or tactics to roll out is this Seth Godin-ism, I guess, an idea that this might not work, kind of in all capital letters, right? Like this might not work. So I do think that there is some degree of comfort with uncertainty that is required to do this job well, there's always a sense that you're like on the edge of what's possible. And especially if you're trying to be creative and color outside the lines a little bit, you have to be able to operate without knowing if something's going to work. Because if you are just sticking to the paint by numbers version of the job, then you're always going to be kind of stuck in just doing this repeatable cycle without really figuring out what's possible and other, you know, interesting ways to get people's attention and change their behavior. So I think that's where a lot of my thought process lives, is around, you know, what can be done differently and where am I feeling certain and where should I be pushing that certainty?
I love it. Very refreshing take given all of the AI chatter. I mean, it all has its place, but this made me think of, oh, wow, like LLMs are prediction machines, often referencing a lot of what's already been done, but we always have to think about what hasn't been and find comfort in doing that.
Right. And I would echo that. I mean, I think a lot of what we do is remixing to some degree anyway. I don't think there's that much of a difference between the prediction machine versus the people involved. And there is some element of just like capturing and collecting influences from outside of your own little bubble. I think that if I was to revise my answer or add on top of my answer, like non-marketing skills, looking to a lot of those influences outside of marketing in some ways. I look to, you know, foundational texts within like UX and things like that. Like, how can we look to behavior change models that would actually influence how we phrase things or how we try to change, you know, get people's attention? And just looking outside of the narrow confines of what we do to see if there's other ideas that kind of cross over and make those connections.
I love that. Yeah. The collecting different influences definitely resonated. I'm also an amateur DJ. So like, I think about that a lot as well. It's like, yeah, at the end of the day, you're remixing stuff, but it's about like how you do it and you know, what the influences that come in and then also the influences you put out. So that's a really good answer. The revised answer is even better. So with all that, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about product marketing. Curious to hear more about your journey, your story. And I think it actually ties this thread together pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, my journey is not traditional, and I don't know if there is a traditional path into product marketing. I think there is a lot of kind of variability to that. And whenever I speak to people, it's always sort of like, I fell into it from this way. There's always a lack of control kind of tied to that. But yeah, so the bulk of my career to date has been in more customer facing roles. So I started in retail sales, and then I moved into I don't even know if they call it this anymore in any industry, but like inside sales, which was like at a time was like, yeah, you're just selling, but you're in a cubicle. Account management, customer success, all of these things really kind of brought together this theme of like, there's a one-to-one problem solving component to it. So you're always just getting to know the person on the other side of the call or the, you know, in-person interaction. And really trying to understand what problems they're facing, what kind of solutions they're seeking, what their goals are, even beyond the confines of like the acute problem to solve. It's like, what are you after and how can I help you get there? That's kind of the core of everything I did as a customer facing individual and in these individual contributor roles. My account management or customer success journey brought me to Buildium, which is a Boston-based startup that had been acquired a couple of years later. But essentially, it was focused primarily on single-family rentals and small multifamily, and it serviced a bunch of adjacent verticals. So you had like student housing, commercial real estate, and then community association management, which was something I wasn't wholly familiar with at the time. Ultimately, that's a lot of like homeowners associations, property owner associations, condos and co-ops and all these different types of membership based real estate, you know, communities. At Buildium, I was managing our largest customers by volume and spend. And a lot of those did skew more towards that community association management vertical. So I kind of fell into being the kind of default expert within the company on all things HOA and condo. Like it just, it happened serendipitously. And because of that, I got a real deep interest in speaking with our customers about it. Those customers are also kind of some of the more eager and willing to communicate with a CSM, which was great for me. You know, it's always, you want to have these good relationships. And that was a journey that I found super fulfilling, but I got to the top of the kind of segmentation, right? So as a CSM, there was only so much more space to go. I mean, realistically, I could become a manager of CSM. At the time, didn't feel like the right next step for me. So I was looking for another way to leverage that skill set. I always liked being a part of the product and having a real, you know, closeness to the product itself. So I thought about maybe moving into product management or perhaps being a sales engineer or something that was much more hands-on in that regard. And then I became familiar with product marketing through, you know, working with that team closely and seeing that there was an opening for that. And it started to really make sense to me as a path to kind of take everything I learned. And that was the next lily pad to kind of jump to say, hey, how do I take what I've learned as a one-to-one problem solver? And now how do I market to many people at once and scale that problem solving up? To make the most impact in my individual capacity. So that was kind of where I was looking to go with that. And yeah, that's how I kind of, my first foray into product marketing.
I love it. Now you're on the dark side. Yeah, I don't know if I've told you this, but I think it was Dave Gerhart said like, you have to get one-to-one down before you can get one-to-many down. And I think that's so true. Like, not to throw shade at anyone, but I think sometimes, you know, you find marketers that have only done one to many and you lose the like practical human nature of like, you have to get one to one right and understand how people actually think and like solving their problems today. Because yeah, customers, prospects will come to you with their own problems. No matter how much you're trying to scale and reach some sort of network effect, like it's the reality of the business.
There is a deep empathy that you need to kind of build it, like not necessarily just being like an empathetic person. That is like, I think that's kind of a prerequisite in some degree, but as somebody, you need to build that up through repetition and muscle memory to some degree, to the point where it is intuitive. And sometimes I'll run into some of these scenarios where we are talking about or strategizing towards a launch. And it's, I'm thinking through, will that work or will it not? I don't know that I can necessarily always articulate why I feel that way. I just do based on all the reps that I put in and communicating with people one-to-one and figuring out how do we make sure that this is going to land with the most impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good segue into, you were at Buildium, and then you moved to like true product marketing, and now you're at Vanica. Can you walk us through kind of that that trajectory transition?
Yeah. So when I started at Buildium in product marketing, the first, call it 9 to 10 months or so, were focused exclusively on enablement. So we had almost like functional swim lanes on the team. And as the enablement expert, that meant I was basically responsible for all of our internal training, all of our knowledge-based content, objection handling and FAQs and talk tracks and one pagers. And you get the idea, but essentially it was learn the product, know it so well that you are the go-to person on everything. Make sure that everyone internally and externally is comfortable and confident in everything that we're doing. So no pressure or anything, right? It's a lot to absorb all that information and to be able to regurgitate it in a way that everyone can feel, or that's easily digestible, I should say. So that was the beginning of my journey into product marketing. And it was a good transition from that customer facing role where I had been on the other side of those trainings previously. So I knew what kind of things I would need to know from those trainings and from those documentation pieces. And it was easy for me to flip that around and say, here's how I'm going to turn the next generation of CSMs and salespeople into our kind of best marketing channel, right? That was kind of the goal. And what became very clear, because we had, like I said, we had been acquired and there was other acquisitions coming on board, the scope of work was increasing. It was either we need like three more of you, or we take the existing product marketing team and we flatten it out where everyone has equal responsibility and we are effectively like end-to-end go-to-market specialists. So that was what we ended up doing. I do credit my boss at the time, James Mastin, if he's listening. He was looking out for me, happily accepted the challenge of, all right, let's expand this. It was, you know, the best thing for my career to take on more and to, you know, go beyond what I had been doing. But really, that gave me the opportunity to work much more closely with the product managers, to just be involved in, you know, kind of the legs of the stool meetings and be sitting in early on with our, you know, UX and our developers and understand why certain things were done, so I could communicate those decisions into intention around what we were trying to build and why. And yeah, ultimately that really helped me make that switch to becoming more of a strategic partner over someone who executes just kind of the individual task on that like regular recurring basis whenever there's a new release.
Sure. Why do you think James invested in you?
You would have to ask him. I don't know how to answer that properly. I think, you know, I've always put a lot of care and effort into my work. And what I will say is I'm not somebody who grew up being very comfortable, like speaking in front of a crowd. Even doing something like this would have like never would have entered my radar. And to be effectively charged with, all right, now go out and do a training for 150 people. Like that would have melted my brain if you had brought that to me as like a 25-year-old, let's say. But he did continually push me outside my comfort zone in ways that I was able to rise to those challenges. It was almost like the video game design kind of theory where it's like you make it just a little harder each time and then you grow into it. But if you just dropped into the last level, you'd probably just never make it through. And I know he's a big video game guy, so I wonder how intentional this was. But yeah, no, I think he really was able to push me in ways that I was able to deliver and do so in a way that I was able to build confidence. I don't settle for good enough. And when I'm putting my name on something, it has to match my sense of quality.
No, I think it's a good answer. Now we have to make sure he listens to this. I mean, that's for sure. You've dropped in the video games
and everything. Tag him on the post.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So yeah, that happened. And then eventually you moved to Vanica.
Yes.
And now you're leading a team of product marketers. So can you walk me through that as well? Like the learnings and like the journey, how'd that even come to be?
If I had to give myself props, I guess, in any of the kind of like functional specialties within product marketing, I would say that competitive intelligence is one of my better kind of sleeper skills. And one of the things that like I'm always aware of who's in the market and who's doing what. And as a customer success manager at Buildium, I had started to hear the name Vantica pop up from a lot of my customers, right? Like they were telling me about it and I hadn't heard of them in say like 2019, 2020. They were relatively new. I mean, the company is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. So in the scheme of the market and the players, it was relatively, you know, still a new player in that sense where some of these incumbents have been around for 20, 30 years. And so I started to hear the name pop up quite a bit. And I was very curious about where they came from, what made them so special and different. And one of my customers explained it to me in a way that really just lit me up. And I was like, oh, I get what they're doing over there. That's really cool. So I kind of filed that in the back of my brain. I'm like, yeah, that's an interesting differentiated product. As I grew in my career under the RealPage banner, RealPage is the company that I acquired Buildium. I started working very closely with a lot of their other product lines as well. And one of them was a product that is a partner to Vantica. So depending on the meeting I'm in, I'm either thinking about Vantica as a competitor. In other meetings, I'm thinking about it as a top revenue partner. And so I got closer to the brand and I got a real respect for it. And so that became sort of an aspirational thing for me where I was like, if there was an opening there, that like if I was going to go anywhere in this industry, I'd want to go towards something differentiated and special. And as luck would have it, you know, I had I saw a post for the director of product marketing role and decided to throw my name in the hat. So I reached out to Mike Shearer, our director of talent on LinkedIn. And I just said, hey, if you would be willing to talk to me, I'd love to entertain this. And yeah, I mean, it's been everything I had hoped it would be as far as, you know, kind of jumping into a product that is very customer centric, that was built by a team that came from the industry. It was built essentially as an in-house solution for a management company that tried everything and didn't like anything. And, you know, nothing really fit their own aspirational goals for growth and scale. And so they said, well, what would we do differently if we could build our own? And then they did. And then very quickly after they said, you know, this could be a whole product in and of itself. And within a year, they had onboarded their first external client and then they spun it out. So it was a totally separate product from the company that had kind of originated it. But the fact that it was kind of built to scratch that itch is really important to even like our continued success. I think it factors into everything that we do, that we are so committed to this space in a way that all of our roadmap, all of our design, it's all built in a sense of where is the industry going? Where do management companies need to go? And how do we help them get there when nobody else will do that for them? And so we always have a very different approach. We talk differently than everybody else. We present differently from everyone else. And I take a lot of pride in that as far as how we present ourselves to the market. To answer your question, just as far as, you know, managing a team and everything, I mean, this is a big transition from having been a individual contributor in the past. And I don't pretend to know all the answers or say I'm doing it right at all times, but it is an opportunity to kind of take that differentiated mindset and say, again, what is our market need? What do our individual customers need? How do they resonate with our product? And try to speak to those audiences in a way that resonates with them. So we're very intentional with how we build out our team and who we bring on and what kind of role they fulfill. And we push everybody to kind of go outside the boundaries of the typical version of that job where it's like, okay, so we could do the checklist of deliverables and tactics, but what else could we do? And the product marketing function at Vantica is it's product marketing, obviously, but it's also customer marketing and it's partner marketing as well. So that all falls under our teams.
Very cool. Something that I found interesting when we were talking before this was the way you hired and how you prioritize these product marketers. I guess, broader than that, not necessarily focusing too much on domain expertise. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a good one because it's funny. One of the questions I've always asked my customers when I've interacted with them, especially with like new customers when they're onboarding, that first kickoff call, it's like, how did you get into this in the first place? Because everyone has such a unique story. I don't remember if we said this while we were recording or not, but even as product marketers, I think that a lot of people come into this type of job as well, you know, from different places in the industry, different jobs. There isn't always that kind of clear trajectory of like, oh, I went to school for it and then I started doing it right out of school. And I think that's very true of community association management too. They recruit from outside the industry. People fall into it naturally. Sometimes people fall into it as board members within their own community. They have some experience as a member of an HOA. Even people who are board members, sometimes, you know, they get voluntold into, you know, running for a seat on the board because they're just the person who understands finance better than anybody else. So now you're the treasurer. So I think there's always this sense of like, everyone kind of stumbles into these different industries and different jobs. And that's very true of community association management. I see it throughout our partner ecosystem. I see it throughout our customer base. I see it through our end users. I see it internally as well. It's like everyone comes from these disparate backgrounds with a diversity of thought and idea. And I do see it sometimes when people come into the industry from another kind of tangential vertical or whatever it is, and they want to like become an industry expert right away. And really the way you become an expert, like you never become an expert because it's always changing for one. The faces change, the names change, the legislation changes, the dynamics of the, you know, the housing market change. As you go, you just have to kind of take it day by day and conversation by conversation. And I've coached some people on my team that same way. It's like the way you learn this is not going to be from reading or taking a course. The way you learn it is by talking to the people involved and just understanding their motivations. And I think that's true of most product marketing. It's just, who's the person on the other side? What do they want? And how do we help them get there? And it's just like, I credited you and I don't remember who brought this up on the show, but product marketing is problem marketing. Like that is very true in this industry and I imagine every other industry as well.
Yeah. It's funny because I've said it, but I'm pretty sure my mentor is the one who influenced me and said it to me first. And now I have no idea who said it. Probably one of the guests. Maybe
all remixes all the way down.
Exactly. Exactly. I really like that. Yeah. It's like at the end of the day, it's about the basics and mastering, I think, this one-to-one kind of dynamic. So when you were hiring these 3-4 PMMs, like, how, what did you look for? And, you know, maybe you answered that with some of the things, but like, were there any telltale signs you're like, yeah, this person is going to crush it?
There were different personalities. So I don't know that I can define like an overlapping kind of theme there. What I would say is that they are all intensely curious. They all really care a lot, which is really important to me. They all have an eye for detail and quality. Again, I think when we come back to this, like, this might not work type attitude, like they want to try things. Like, I think that's something that I've resonated a lot with my team and, with others in the industry is, we don't want to do boring stuff. We don't want to have, paint by numbers jobs. We don't want to be like feature marketers who are just like, we have this thing and this is how much it costs. And like that to me is just, it's lifeless in some ways. And I would much rather go much deeper into who is this for? Why do they care? Like, let's make people care about what we're doing over here. And what we're doing is things that are intentionally designed to solve their problems. So, just having a lot of these conversations, I would imagine if you interviewed my team, what the interviews were like, they would probably say that it was not a very structured interview. You know, to me, a lot of my conversations are much more conversational. They're almost like this to some degree, where it's, I just want to see how you think, because I can teach you how to do what we need to do, but I can't teach you how to think about problems and how to approach mindset. Like, mindset, I don't think is something I can accurately or effectively coach well. I think it's something that you have a certain approach, and that's the part that I really look for, is how do you approach problems? All the details, like, you know, just like the industry expertise, like that stuff that you can learn elsewhere.
I like that. I think, like, you know, if we were to look at your, I guess I am looking at your career in third person, but, like, you know, you shifted roles and you shifted industries, and often that comes up with some sort of imposter syndrome, some sort of scars. What are yours, and like, how do you manage that? Same thing, you kind of answered this, but I'd love to just hear you tackle it.
Yeah, the idea, like, I have a conspiracy theory that, like, every product marketer has, like, a healthy dose of imposter syndrome to them, or you can't do it well, because, again, it's like, you have no idea if what you're doing is going to be good or not. I think if you're doing creative work, if you're doing something that's meaningful and interesting, it's equally likely it's going to fail as it is going to be the smashing success. And so that uncertainty is like, okay, so you're just pushing the boundaries on what might or might not work. And when you're digging in there, I think sometimes that is the tricky part with cross-functional alignment, and think like some teams are just much more geared towards, we need assurances and we need guarantees that this is the right way to go. And that's something I constantly struggle with, is like, I can't tell you if this is going to be, like, I think we're going to have to just see and get some numbers and data. And if it doesn't work, we'll just do it differently next time. You know, I think there has to be that sense of like, I'm, to some degree, if you're doing something new and untested, you are kind of making it up as you go. And that's tough for people who need that assurances.
Got to think from first principles. This is fun. I think we covered a lot of good ground. You've already listened to the show, so I'll tell you, but you've already heard it. The last two questions I ask every guest.
Yeah.
First, so you've had a lot of time to think about it, so we're expecting a mind-blowing answer here. Oh, sorry, no. I just like set you up for disaster here. The first question is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
I struggled with this one because like you think about it as hearing it from other shows, and I think I mentioned this to you maybe in our last conversation, but I do really bad with open-ended questions. And I think that is where, you know, we could go down a whole tangent on that. What I will say, just one of the things I find that I tell other people internally, and when I'm talking to people in different roles or whatever the case is, I often find myself saying that product marketing is the most cross-functional job in business, like full stop. And I firmly believe that like no one is as in tune with every aspect of the business as product marketing is or should be. So you end up working with everybody across all these different goals, and you have a lot of say and influence over every aspect of the business, and whether that's all the customer facing components to it or pricing and packaging, or like go down the list of the Product Marketing Alliance certification. And it's like, there's a checklist of everything that the business does, and everyone needs product marketing's insight in there. Or if they don't know that they need it yet, they should have product marketing's insight there. So I don't know if that is like this mind-blowing answer that you were looking for. But I mean, it's true. I think it's probably also, and I will give credit to PMA for this one as well, it's probably the most misunderstood job in business as well, where everyone has their own interpretation of what you do. And so the depths, the breadth, I should say, of asks and deliverables is just, it's astronomically high. So, you know, I think it's funny how often you are basically having to re-explain what you do and how you can contribute. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the long and short of our job, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great answer. It reminds me of this like Lion King meme where it's like, your job description is everything that touches the sun. And it's so true. It's like, yeah, there's you can cut it any different way. And I like that everyone has their own perception and you have to like really think through and shape.
What I will say though, and that is a struggle for me, and I'm sure it's a struggle for others as well, is being able or knowing when you have the permission and authority to say no to things. Because I think if you squint hard enough at any sort of request, it's always like, yeah, I guess that is my job, so I guess I have to like work on this as a priority. It becomes really squishy on like, when am I not the right person? I'm constantly fighting that fight internally, just like where can I say no? When should I say no? If you figure it out, you let me know. But in the meantime, I'll keep trying.
I was going to say, definitely when this goes out, I want to see some comments from people being vulnerable, because we all know we've been there and it's a stark reality. And then of course, someone on LinkedIn is going to be like, I have this figured out. Use my Claude skill to do it all for you.
That's what Claude said. Yeah.
Nice. Mike, how can people learn more about you? It's been great.
I would say LinkedIn. I mean, that I basically got rid of all my other social accounts a little while back. So, I have Instagram basically just to get memes from my wife and my friends, but I don't check it. So don't bother following me there. Otherwise, yeah, LinkedIn is the best way to go.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thank you for your time, your insight. This was a great episode, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.